Hey, this is Leonard Kinsey, author of The Dark Side of Disney, and you are listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
Welcome to yet another interview here on GeekCast Radio. I am one of your hosts, Steve, Joe, and Mike, and joining me is Spade of the Vault Matrix. Hello.
Hello, sir.
How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Awesome. Joining us now is the man that exposed the dark side of Disney, Mr. Leonard Kinsey. Hey, Leonard, how are you?
Hey, guys. I'm doing all right. Good to be here.
Awesome. Where do we want to start? Do we want to just have some general chat about this, or do we just want to go straight into the question, Spada?
Well, Leonard, where did you get the idea for this book?
I got the idea from the book because, well, I was born and raised in Florida, about an hour and a half from Disney, and we used to go there all the time. We had passes that kind of let us go during the down times as much as we wanted. And so, you know, I really liked it, and then I moved away when I was 18, and gradually kept going back. And you know, even though I was not living anywhere near there, something just kept drawing me back to the parks, almost like they were, you know, it was just a childhood playground that I'd come to, had some sort of nostalgia for. And so I kept going back, but you know, it was kind of boring riding the same rides over and over again. So I'd make my own adult kinds of fun, and so people keep asking me, well, you know, it's just for kids, why do you keep going back, why do you keep going back? And I tell them, and I got tired of saying the same thing over and over again, and that's why I decided to write the book. So the book is kind of the answer to why do you as an adult keep going back to Walt Disney World.
Awesome. You said, I think you said it in a recent interview, that you've been to Disney at least 100 times.
Oh yeah, or more. It's got to be more than that. I think I've probably been to each park. Well, not Animal Kingdom, but Epcot, Magic Kingdom, and Epcot. I've probably been to each one of those 100 times apiece. So yeah, it's like I said, we just used to go all the time, especially Epcot, I almost feel like I could walk these parks blindfolded, just going by the sounds and the smells and kind of, you know, it was kind of like my backyard almost, you know, and I got to know them really well. So it feels like a second home almost.
Is there a specific trip that stands out, whether it was like a trip, you know, growing up going, or whether it was any time recently?
I guess the two trips that stand out were the first visit I had to Epcot. That one really stood out, and I think I was 6 years old, and I'd been staring at this. They sent this book out to all the teachers everywhere in Florida, and it kind of had the concept art for the park in it. And I remember actually stole it from the classroom library and brought it home, and I would just sit there and stare at these pictures because I thought they were so awesome. And then actually going there and going in that monorail that goes a loop around the whole park and seeing these pictures, these paintings that I'd been staring at in reality and better than I could have imagined was just amazing. And seeing how computers were used in there, and I mean, if I wasn't a geek already, that turned me into a total geek. So that'll always be a memorable trip. The other one I remember was a kind of a turning point in how I viewed Walt Disney World was, I think it was the summer after my freshman year of college. Myself and two of my friends wanted to take a trip before we all had to go back to school because we were all living in separate states and best friends. So we couldn't think of anything else to do other than go to Disney. So we went to Disney and got a cheap hotel room. And that I think was the first time that I'd ever done adult activities in Walt Disney World, sneaking down the utilidors, drinking a ton, smoking, and just having a good fun time that was definitely not kid friendly. So,
when did the, I don't want to say the allure, but when did the magic start to wane for you?
It was definitely in high school. Just when you hit puberty and, you definitely don't want to have anything to do with the characters, the big Mickey and, Pooh Bear and stuff. You want to stay as far away from them as possible.
Don't touch me!
And yeah, because you're scoping girls, and you don't want to be seen hugging these huge, animals, basically. I just remember being really annoyed with my sister and my mother. And, when you're that age, you don't want anything to do with your family. And kind of striking off on my own, exploring the parks on my own. And, it seemed like things kind of changed when I hit that age. And I still enjoyed it. Like I said, Epcot was always, I don't think Epcot ever lost its allure just because it is a total park for geeks. As far as Magic Kingdom goes, yeah, definitely. It was around high school.
Now, back then, there was Epcot, Magic Kingdom. Did they have Universal at that time? Did they have any of the other bigger parks?
Well, the back then it was called MGM Studios. That opened up when I was still in high school. And then about a year later, Universal Studios opened up. Because what had happened is Disney found out that Universal was building Universal. And they decided to beat him. Eisner wanted to beat him to the punch. So they kind of did a rush job and built MGM Studios and then Universal. And I remember being there for, I think it was one of the first days that Universal Studios opened too. And it was a catastrophe. I mean, it was a total disaster. I think maybe one ride worked. I remember they gave everyone tickets to come back, like free tickets to come back some other time. And it was a mess. Whereas MGM opened and everything was fine, but there really wasn't anything there. It was like there was like two rides, maybe.
And it's still kind of like that.
It is. Yeah. No, I agree.
It's really weird because that's where I went for my honeymoon in 2007. And
oh, cool.
There wasn't much to do at MGM.
No, I still think it's like a half day park. Like you can get it done in a half day.
Oh, yeah. We did a half day there. And then we went back to Epcot, and then we came back to MGM to do the night laser show.
Fantasmic, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably the way to do it. Because I don't know. It used to be, so the tram tour that they had was a lot more extensive, and they had a working back lot where they were actually filming stuff, so it was kind of interesting for that. But they had an animation studio with working animators. All that's gone now. They did add some more rides, but I don't know. It's definitely, there's some good things about it, but it's not up to the same level as Epcot or Magic Kingdom.
Well, what have been some of the biggest changes you've seen? Obviously MGM and now the Animal Park, which is my favorite of the parks now.
But yeah, I mean,
some of the biggest changes?
I mean, in my mind, the biggest change was Epcot going from, Epcot completely changing its theme. It was, educational theme park at its roots, and it had the whole point was to give you optimism about the future. Technology was going to create this amazing future, and it kind of went from that to being really dumbed down and catering to, the people who want thrill rides and putting all these characters in there so the kids could see Mickey Mouse.
The masses.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the sad thing is that the masses, I think, were being enriched by the original theme of Epcot, and now no one walks away from that really gaining anything except for, some flashes of, thrill rides. But it's not a long-lasting thing that they walk away with, which is disappointing.
And I remember back when I went, when I was a kid, Mike, you probably remember as well, when you went into the dome, there was the, it was a ride, but it was a slower ride, and they had the animatronic dinosaurs, and it was very much about the future of technology, and now it's hosted by Ellen.
Oh, yeah, that's the Universe of Energy, actually. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that used to be, and now it's Ellen's Energy Adventure.
And
it does have Bill Nye, the Science Guy, in it. So I guess,
well,
maybe is something. but yeah, you're right. It used to be a very dramatic, sweeping, kind of awe-inspiring show, and then they, you know, again, kind of dumbed it down and made it funny. So it's disappointing.
I'm trying to remember if it was Magic Kingdom that had this or if it was Epcot. I could have sworn it was Epcot. As a kid, I've been to Disney World. I've never been to any of the others other than the one in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I have no desire to go to any of the others other than the one in Florida. but I've been 5 times in my lifetime. And I went in 1986 and I was 6 years old. And we, you know, did, you know, the Small World ride. And there was a ride with Figment on it. And I could have sworn that was in Epcot, but...
It was, yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, see, I know my memory.
Journey into Imagination, that's in the Imagination Pavilion.
Right.
Kind of a big pyramid-shaped glass pavilion. And yeah, I think it was in 1998 that they actually refurbished that ride, which sounds pleasant enough, but it wasn't. What they actually did was gutted it and took Figment out entirely. And,
See, that's the funny thing, because I went in 86, and then I went like 3 times between 91 and 95, and by 95, Figment wasn't even there, I don't remember.
Okay.
I don't remember Figment in 95. But as a kid, you know, I loved, like, you know, little plush dolls that you could buy of them and everything else, but in the ride as a 6-year-old scared the living shit out of me.
That's great. You know, that's the funny thing about a lot of those Disney dark rides is that they do have very ominous parts to them that are scary, you know, like the Snow White ride, Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. But I think that's kind of what's cool about them, you know.
Yeah.
And when you're whitewashing everything and making it, you know, all just happy, then it's not quite as interesting, I don't think.
Yeah.
But
Spada asked you about, you know, some of the biggest changes over the years. A follow-up to that would be, in your opinion, as the park has evolved, do you think it's for the better, or has it just kind of, like, lost its magic?
Yeah, I definitely think Epcot has lost a large majority of its magic.
Mm.
Magic Kingdom has pretty much stayed the same. I mean, there's always...
They kind of have to. I mean, that's the...
There's always maintenance issues. You know, those kind of go up and down as, you know, as it's almost like a cycle. You know, some years you'll see peeling paint everywhere and, you know, trash on the ground, which you normally should never see. And then it'll pick back up again and everything will be great for a few more years. But that is not the case with Epcot. That actually, I think, went through a major downturn where it's not anywhere near, at least for me as you know, the kind of person that I am. I mean, I always thought that, you know, it was almost like the physical embodiment of, like, Starfleet Academy or like something you would see in Next Generation. Like, it just looked like that to me. And I thought that was really cool. And all the rides, same thing. Like, when you went in them, they all had that kind of future outlook to them that was very similar to Star Trek. A lot of optimism, a lot of hope, a lot of, well, technology's pretty cool. And that's not there anymore, which some people may like. They may think that's an improvement. I personally don't.
Yeah. And I think, at least for me, seeing all the advertising and everything else, because I sadly watch a lot of Disney Channel, all the advertising they show on there, and obviously it is their channel, but they show Epcot for maybe 5 seconds in a 30-second ad. The rest of it is all Magic Kingdom, or it's, you know, hey, come see the, you know, Princess and the Frog show, or come see the new light show we've got going on. And with Magic Kingdom, I liked it. They constantly you know, obviously they have to keep the core characters, Mickey, Minnie, Goofy, yeah. Donald, all that stuff. But I like how they incorporate like stuff like Lion King and you know, a lot of the Phineas and Ferb stuff is incorporated now sometimes, and I do like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think that Epcot has, it's essentially been like, it's almost a redheaded stepchild at this point.
I mean, it almost was from day one, I would say. The immediate thing that people said Epcot stood for was every person comes out tired. That was like the running joke. You know, I mean, it is. It's a big park, and it's a huge park, actually. I think if you walk the entire park, you end up walking something like 8 miles or something.
Mm-hmm.
And that combined with kind of the somber seriousness of some of the rides, you know, there was no Space Mountain, there was no Thunder Mountain. I think, so from the very beginning, the press didn't really know how to approach this park. And to be honest, you know, neither did the company. You know, Epcot was originally supposed to be an actual city where people lived in. And when Walt Disney died, they just didn't know how to make that happen. He knew how to make it happen, but right. They didn't have anyone with that sort of vision and leadership and the ability to rally sponsors. They didn't have that. So they turned it into a theme park, which he would have hated. So it was kind of, you know, from the very beginning, it had its thematic issues, I guess. But now they just don't have a clue what they're doing with it. So
it sounds like a marketing problem, because as soon as you walk in, you've got this old retro futuristic stuff here, mm-hmm. and then here's the test track, and right. here are some thrill rides, yep. and then here's the rest of the world.
Right. Yep.
It's like, wait, what?
Yeah, and you know that the World Showcase part was intended, and I think serves its purpose as kind of a permanent World's Fair.
Yeah.
And that's great. And that, you know, that part of the park has not diminished. It hasn't improved. You know, there were supposed to be three or four other countries that they were going to add to that were in the planning stages and that never got added. But on the other hand, it hasn't gotten any worse. It's still kept up well. It's still really neat to walk around there. And yeah, that part of the park is continuing to serve its purpose. It's just the Future World section that isn't.
Yeah.
And it's funny because you have Epcot, you've got Magic Kingdom, which is obviously their front runner. It's what they're putting their money into.
Yep.
And then you've got Epcot, which they don't really know what to do with. MGM, which is studio, which is a disaster.
Yeah.
And then you've got this winning hit with the Animal Kingdom.
Yeah, people do like it. Yeah,
it's a lot of fun. I loved it when we went. It was my favorite part by far, except for the parade.
Yeah, that's the bad part about the parade. That park, if a parade comes through, you're not getting anywhere. You're just stopping and watching the parade. Like you don't have a choice.
You can't, because the streets are too narrow.
Exactly. Yep. Yep, that is totally true.
And God help you if you need to use the bathroom when that parade comes through.
Oh, yeah.
Because all the dads just disappear into the bathroom.
Really?
Yeah, we noticed that during the day three different times.
Yeah.
That we got caught by the parade, and you just see all the dads go to the bathroom.
That's great. Yeah, you know, it's similar in Magic Kingdom. When a parade comes through, it gets very difficult to navigate the walkways because they just get crowded up. And that is probably the only time that I ever go down to the Utilidors, which are the underground tunnels, anymore, is because I'm not standing there, or I'm not dealing with, you know, this trying to push through a crowd of people, when I can literally walk through a doorway, go down a flight of steps, and then pop out like way far away from that parade with no trouble at all. So
now, speaking of the Utilidors, yeah. When did you start finding these things? Was it in your teenage years or when you got a little older?
It was in college. It was that summer after my freshman year. And it was like just about that time when kind of BBSs were, you know, springing up, and you know, you could connect to them and kind of download the, you know, the map, like art that was ASCII art, character-based art. And someone posted a map of the Utilidors character art map, and we were like, whoa, we didn't even know that was down there. You know, going to this park so many times and not knowing that underneath it was an entirely separate, you know, thing that mirrored the whole upstairs was just totally blew my mind. It's like, we got to see that. And it turns out, you know, that once we found the first door to get down there, you know, we would just we got down there and then we'd just go back up every stairway that we saw to find all the other doors. And they're all unmarked and they're all kind of hidden. But none of them, or most of them don't say keep out or cast members only or anything. They're just unmarked doors. So yeah, that really, really, really got to be a cool way to enjoy the park. Cause it was almost like scavenger hunt and it was super neat. And I, like I said, I still go down there occasionally, you know, when the need arises.
I love in your book the ASCII art of the Utilidors. I swear I've seen this outline in some RPG from the 80s or something.
It's very possible. Like I said, you know, we got it from a BBS, and it's not super accurate. You know, obviously being ASCII art, it's not going to be super accurate. But it was enough to get our imaginations kind of running wild. Like, you know, you see this stupid little map and you're just like, wow, this is a whole other world. You know, it's like Columbus getting like, you know, a map of the Americas or something. If you know, be like, wow, this is out there, something like that. So I it was just as stupid and ridiculous as that map looks. It really opened up a whole new world for my friends and I.
And another thing that I find really interesting is there are no signs. No keep out or anything like that. Because if you go to any other park, you're going to see,
employees only.
Yeah, employees only, cast only. Yeah, but you don't see that. And you just think that it's part of the building or it's just there and you don't pay any attention to it.
That's exactly right. And you know, it is. It just looks like almost like kind of like they're painted on or that they're just, you know, part of the architecture. And like I said, I'd gone who knows how many times and just never paid any attention to them at all. And it wasn't until I realized that they were there that I started looking, you know, and really paying attention. And then they're pretty obvious. But even then, like you said, there's no signs on them that say keep out or anything. Mm-hmm. So
now, you know, I know you said in the book that there was a time or two that you got caught and you'd just say, oh, we're looking for the restroom, or we got lost in the way of the restroom, something like that. Has anyone ever said you cannot be down here and like forcibly removed you, like security or anything like that? Or do you know of anyone that has happened to? Because it just seems to me that these Utilidors in this whole underground part of the park, obviously it's for maintenance and everything else.
Right.
It would just seem that they would have, like, not really security, but they would have tighter measures. They would have video surveillance, something.
Yeah, I mean, so the thing is, once you're down there, there's not a chance of you getting caught, unless you're being stupid, like doing something really dumb, like making an ass out of yourself.
Right.
Because that's where all the cast members kind of come in and go out. And, you know, there's people, a lot of people in plain clothes walking around. And if you're not looking suspicious, they're just not going to give you a second look. Now, the part where I have gotten caught is actually going in there, because there is no reason why anyone in plain clothes should be opening up one of those doors. In other words, only uniformed cast members should be going down there.
Right.
So, yeah, I've had people see me opening the doors and stop me right then. You know, what are you doing? You know, what do you think you're doing? And then, you know, then I'll just be like, oh, what, this isn't the bathroom. And, and you know, I've gotten caught doing other things. I recently snuck up to Image Works, which is in Imagination Pavilion. It was the second floor of that pavilion. It was kind of like a high tech playground where you'd go up and do all these neat things with computers and stuff. And ever since the refurb, it's been closed. And I wanted to see what was up there. So I snuck up there and filmed it, and it's all messed up and you know, exposed wiring and no lights. It's pitch black in places. And I was pretty freaked out. And I get to the very end and I'm about ready to leave and totally got busted. I pulled the same routine, you know. Oh, what do you mean I'm not supposed to be up here? It's really nice. Are you sure? And oh well, okay. I'm sorry. And you know, by the end of it, the person's just feeling really bad for me. Just like they think I'm a complete idiot. And yeah. You know, they let me go. But that is the main reason why I wear a disguise. So anytime I'm photographed or I'm going to be on video, I wear some sort of mask or something. Right. Because I know if I get caught and they know, like if people at who work there know what I look like,
yep.
Those excuses aren't going to fly. They'll just be like, oh, no, I know who you are.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
you're coming with me. And
Kind of ties into the next question of has the company or the parks or anything, has Disney ever said anything about the book? I mean, because this is a book that says the dark side of Disney. I mean, Disney technically is a copyrighted name, and I know that you can use it in your book and whatever else as long as you cite stuff like that, but has the company said anything?
You know, I was really, really, really worried about that when I first published the book. You know, it's immediate lawsuit type thing. And what I came to find through talking with various people is that there really is no company. There is no Disney company. There's like, you know, countless smaller subsidiaries, companies, you know, agencies, departments, none of whom talk to each other, all of whom have different agendas.
Oh God. And so it's like Sony.
Yeah. It's like any huge company, you know? And so really I realized the only people that the public ever hears from are probably the Imagineers, who are the artistic purveyors. So anything you're going to hear about, you know, the parks usually is one of them as a spokesman. Used to be Michael Eisner. He used to come out and talk a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then Disney Legal. You hear about it when they shut down a daycare because they've got Disney figures painted on their walls. And I think lately Disney Legal's really kind of cooled down a bit because it's just bad press if they keep suing people, you know, who obviously are well-intentioned or, you know, have a product that people like. So I haven't heard from Disney Legal, but I have heard from plenty of people in other departments, cast members, and they, you know, for the large portion of them just love it. And, you know, last time I was in the parks, people, the girl that I go around with, Draven Starr, who's the cover model of the book, she kind of accompanies me on the trips and is in all the videos and stuff. She's kind of the face of the book, I guess. We got stopped a lot in the rides and stuff by cast members, people who recognized her and were telling her how much they love the book and stuff, the cast members who were working the rides.
Yeah.
So that was really cool. And I've heard from higher-ups. For example, some of the managers, some of the supervisors are buying multiple copies of the book and handing it out to their employees so they can know what scams to be out on the lookout for. You know, well, read this stuff, and if you see anyone doing this stuff, then you know it's a scam and don't let them get away with it type thing. So it's like a training manual almost. So that's kind of fun.
That's pretty cool. That is pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought that was neat. So, I mean, the reaction's been fairly positive from people who work for Disney. And I do get a few nasty emails or comments from some cast members, but the large majority get it and they enjoy it. And but as far as something official from the Disney company, no, haven't heard anything.
That's good.
Yeah, it is. I'm fine with that. So
I have to ask, other than the poisonous snakes, what is the weirdest thing you have found?
Like the weirdest creepy wildlife that they have out there?
No, I let me rephrase that. Other than what is just the strangest, like, mind-blowing thing you have found in your adventures?
Well, I mean, like I said, the utilidors in general were pretty mind-blowing, and you know, that this being pre-internet, there wasn't anything out there about them. Now you can go on the internet and you can read up on the utilidors and find out all about them and everything. but they didn't have that. So just realizing that the Magic Kingdom is really the second story, you know, it's the second level. The Utilidors are level number one. Magic Kingdom was built on top of those. That was pretty mind-blowing. And I was just really impressed with what a feat of engineering that was. Because it is. It's amazing. And, I mean, they basically dredged a swamp, you know, poured a bunch of concrete over it, made these tunnels, and then built a theme park on top of that. It's just incredible. So, I mean, I think that's pretty amazing.
And that was done in what, the 50s or the 60s?
That was, I think they started it in 67, and it finished in 72 is when it opened. So they started planning it, I think, around 67. But, yeah, I mean, it's just, it is, it's impressive. But as far as, like, one of the weirdest things that I've seen or that I've heard of around there that I just think is pretty wild is that brain-eating amoeba. You guys heard of that?
Yes. Is it Nigerian?
Yeah, it's Nigeria fowl or something like that.
Yeah, that's one of the things they say is don't go swimming in like any of the ponds or anything.
Right, and it's made news recently because people have been getting this thing from their neti pots. So they mm-hmm. use their neti pots with tap water, and it's in some tap water, and basically what it does is you get it through your nose. It goes up your nose into your brain, and then, yeah, basically, like, gives you an extremely severe form of meningitis, kind of. They call it a brain-eating bacteria, and there's no cure. You die within a few days. That's just it. So, and naturally, it lives in warm water in the silt, and so if you're swimming around a lake and, you know, you get some silty water up your nose, well, maybe you'll die. Now, for, you know, if you're out in the middle of the lake water skiing or something, chances are that you're not going to find it there. But you used to be able to swim on all the beaches and all the resorts, the Polynesian, the Grand Floridian, the Contemporary, used to be able to go out and swim there. They even had a wave machine at the Polynesian that kind of made waves on that big beach there. Unfortunately, yep. it was eroding the beaches, so they had to shut it off.
Whoops.
Yeah. So, but no more. You're not allowed to swim on those beaches anymore. And even River Country was over by Fort Wilderness and used the natural lake water as its water source, and that shut down. People say it's because of the bacteria. I don't know if I believe that. I think that got shut down because they opened up two other water parks, and there was no reason to keep that one open. But anyway, so yeah, that's pretty wild, that brain-eating bacteria or brain-eating amoeba.
Yeah. Because the whole point of the book is you're showing people, you know, how to have a more adult adventure vacation thing, and you talk about in the book about sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yep.
You know, when I got to the whole sex section, I swear to God, I burst out laughing. Don't scare people by attempting to hump Goofy's leg.
It's true.
I nearly died laughing at that line.
Don't do it. Not nice.
I'm just getting this picture of Goofy just like belting somebody.
Oh, God. I've been watching, in preparation for talking to you, I've been watching some of the videos on the website.
Oh, cool.
And I watched the tattoos video.
Oh, neat.
And I'm assuming you don't still have it, but do you still have your book cover tattoo on the back of your neck?
No. Funny thing about that is apparently those temporary tattoos don't react too well to chlorine. Like the next day I went swimming and I think the chlorine like dissolved it off, which is fine. You know, I got like hundreds of them. But so meanwhile, you know, the girls go get a real tattoo on the back of their necks, a real Disney tattoo. And I put a temporary tattoo and mine comes off in a day and they've got theirs for life. But no, that was cool. So that was Pentakis and Draven. Draven's the cover model. They both got dark side of Disney tattoos on the backs of their neck, which was really neat. So, yeah.
But how has the book done? I mean, not asking actual, like, how much money have you made off of it, but I mean, like, it's gotten, I know it's gotten a lot of popularity, but I mean, how is it doing?
I mean, it's massively exceeded my expectations. You know, it's really flattering. If you look at Amazon's rankings, if you look at the book on Amazon, you can see where it's ranked in the various categories. You know, it's ranked in whatever, Southwest Travel Guides, and it's usually stays number one on, I mean, on Southeast Travel Guides, it usually stays number one in that category. It's also in the humor category, and that's where it's really neat to, if I look at my ranking on there, you know, I'm in there with all these people that I just massively admire. You know, someone like Kevin Smith, someone like Tina Fey, you know, all these great comedy writers. And I'm sometimes surpassing them in sales, which is just astounding. And so, you know, that's pretty cool. And the only thing that kind of is crappy is that because I'm not published by one of the big major publishers, I'm not qualified to be listed in the New York Times bestseller list.
Oh, that sucks.
But other people who I'm outselling are, and they are on the New York Times bestseller list. And, you know, overall sales rank on Amazon, those figures don't lie. You know, it's like not even looking at the different categories that I'm outranking them in, just overall.
Yeah.
And I'm outselling them. So, you know, technically New York Times bestseller, you know, in actuality, not so much, but.
Well, see, here's the thing. Like, you put out a very unique behind the scenes look at the Walt Disney World parks versus, and this is no disrespect to him. I love the guy and, you know, I love everything the guy has done pretty much, but, you know, Kevin Smith will write a book about, you know, this adventure he had somewhere, and that's just, you know, one adventure. He's not, you know, you put a lot of hard work. I mean, all of the tips and tricks that you put into this book about, you know, the hotels and, mm-hmm. and the drink vouchers and everything else. I mean, it's very informative and it's also funny. And, you know, Kevin Smith, no disrespect to the man, he can write an autobiography. Right. I mean, that's really what he can write about. You know, yeah. It's not like, and I think this is probably the only book about the parks I've ever seen. I mean, other than, like, you know, travel guides and stuff like that. But I mean, I don't think anyone has ever done this.
Well, they haven't. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to write it, because I was searching for information about the kind of trip that I wanted to take to Disney right. World. And that just wasn't out there. And, you know, you kind of gleam it from, there's like Walt Disney World for lovers. You know, well, you think, wow, it's going to have like the best places to have sex. They don't say the word sex once in the entire book. How can you make a book called Walt Disney World for Lovers and not talk about sex? It doesn't make sense. And then there was another book called Mouse Junkies. I'm thinking like, wow, they're going to talk about like best places to do drugs. Nope. Didn't mention drugs once.
It's like Hoarders for Disney people.
it was dumbfounding to me that people assumed, not assumed, but kind of the overarching idea of Disney was the second you step onto property, any vice you have immediately disappears. Well, do I drink? Well, I'm not going to be drinking now. Do I smoke pot? Well, apparently not anymore. Do I have sex? Nope, no more sex. You know, anything that was even slightly non-puritanical was you know, out the window when you hit property. And I knew that was crap, you know. It's just that people are people, you know. They're not going to stop drinking or doing drugs or having sex or cursing or, you know, whatever, just because they are on Walt Disney World property. And there was nothing out there that kind of acknowledge that very simple reality. And so that's probably one of the reasons why it's been popular, because it takes real life and, you know, applies it to a very non-real life setting, which is cool.
And I mean, let's face it, sorry, Spader, go ahead.
Well, I was also going to say, and I think another reason the book is popular is because a lot of this is all repeatable. People can do this.
Sure. Yeah.
While Kevin Smith will string this fantastic yarn that will never occur ever again.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is a travel guide in all senses of the word. I mean, these are tips you can use them. And, you know, I do give caveats to some of the ones that are possibly illegal or that can get you kicked out. But you can certainly, you know, use these tips if you want to. Yeah. They apply to everybody. You know, I'm not the only one who can go down the utilidors. So, yeah.
Just make sure you don't get caught going down there.
That's the key.
Yeah. You know, I think the major, I wouldn't say it's a blockade of sorts, but the major thing about Disney and Walt Disney World and the parks and the overall company itself, it's a family company.
Mm-hmm.
They're not marketing towards people like us who, you know, are adult and want to have an adult vacation in this, you know, family-friendly park. And that's how they, you know, advertise themselves. Hey, family of four, you can have this weekend at Disney, or you can do this, you can do that. So,
and I don't think it's that they don't advertise to people like us. I think it's that they can't, just based on the brand. And, you know, that's why Eisner, for example, did something very smart when he opened up Touchstone Pictures, where they could release movies that Disney couldn't release, for example, Splash, you know, Daryl Hannah coming out of the water, you know, nude, that couldn't be a Disney film. Along the same lines, possibly that's why I haven't heard any, you know, anything from Disney Legal, because I'm kind of doing what they can't do, appealing to an audience that they can't appeal to, that they are just not able to market to. And,
yeah, because you're not going to get an autograph signing, you know, you're not going to get an event at Walt Disney World saying, "Hey, here's Leonard Kinsey, the author of Dark Side of Disney," in the middle of Magic Kingdom. That's not going to happen.
Not going to happen. Nope. But again, you know, I'm getting people to go to the parks who maybe otherwise wouldn't have ever thought they could have a good time there.
It's very, very awesome.
Yeah, and it's true. And at the very least, you know, I'm hopefully helping out bored husbands to, you know, find some fun things to do while their kids are off running around and whatnot. So, but yeah, I do think it appeals to an audience that the Disney company cannot normally appeal to. And I love Disney. You know, I have nothing against them. It's part of my childhood. I go there 3 or 4 times a year. I love it. I think Walt Disney he's one of the great historical figures, you know, total genius. I look up to him and have huge respect for him. But, you know, that doesn't mean that that I have to share all the values of the company does now. And, you know, Walt Disney himself cursed like a sailor, you know, and smoked like a chimney and certainly, you know, drank. You know,
but again, it all goes to public perception and public image at that point.
Yep.
You know, because you would, I mean, even in today's age, I'm sorry, you would not see a story of Walt Disney, you know, gets his children taken away because he's drunk and ranting on the internet. You know, I mean, you wouldn't see that with him because of this very public image that the company has to keep up.
Sure.
You know, I'm sure there might be a story here and there, stuff like that, but, you know, obviously you're not going to see stuff like that. So the website is darksideofdisney.com.
Yep.
What can people expect to see over there? Is there going to be a sequel to the book, like an updating at some point, or?
Actually the website is kind of, so there's a blog on the website. That's kind of like my continuing adventures. So I probably won't make a sequel to the Dark Side Disney. I'll just keep updating the blog with all the new and fun and interesting things that I do, new adventures that I go on, new places I sneak into.
I saw one of the videos. I think it was like last day of the trip. I forget which. It was like two videos before the tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, hey, this looks like water, but it's really not. And I was like, there's no way he's going to get away with that. And it's like, what do you got there, sir? Oh, it's just water. Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, that's totally. Yeah, that was fun.
Oh, that was so funny.
And it was, you know, just a water bottle filled with gin all the way up to the top. And, you know, it's interesting that that's one of the big things is there, the crowds going into that park are so massive for most of the day that they just don't have time to do check real security everybody. Checks. I mean, it's a show, essentially, you know.
Yeah.
They've got people out there purely for show, pretty much, you know, and they're not really stopping anything by looking in your bag. They're stopping something by, you know, giving you the thought that they might find, you know, something bad that you're bringing in. So that just keeps people from, you know, bringing in guns or whatever. But they're not going to open up every water bottle and sniff it. You know, they just that the lines would be, you know, out down to, you know, St. Pete if they did that. It just, they just can't do that. So, yeah, that was pretty funny. And I also had a bunch of little airline bottles of,
of booze
stuffed into my socks.
you stuffed it into your socks.
Yeah.
If you're at the airport, you're so getting busted.
Yeah, that one worked through X-ray. Hey, you know, maybe they will put you know, X-ray machines or whatever metal
detectors. Let's hope not.
Yeah, that would be lame. but yeah, so people can go to the blog and kind of see the new things I'm getting into and watch my videos. And then I'm also publishing a new book, which will be coming out next month.
Sweet.
And this is a fiction book. It's a novel about a guy who has a breakdown and decides that he's going to go live in the only place where he was ever really happy, which was Walt Disney World. So he goes and lives at Walt Disney World, and it's about all the weird people he meets and kind of the seamy underbelly of the culture that he decides he, you know, is there. So
that reminds me of the Tom Hanks movie The Terminal.
It's kind of like that.
Guy is stuck in the terminal and he can't leave and he ends up living there.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. And again, you know, all the weird characters that the guy meets. I've been describing it as kind of like Bret Easton Ellis goes to Disney World, like American Psycho in Disney World. And it's still got the violence and the drug use and the sex and stuff. But
what's the name of the new book?
The name of the new book is Our Kingdom of Dust. And you can actually go to BambooForestPublishing.com. That's my publishing company, and that'll give you information on all the new books that I'll be coming out with. And I got a few more in the pipeline that weren't written by me, but are books about Disney that Disney would not put out themselves. So that's kind of going to be my my thing going forward. So I think it'll go well.
Awesome.
Yeah.
You got anything else you want to talk about, Spada?
I'm good to go, sir.
All right. You can also follow Leonard on Twitter. It's Dark Side Disney.
Yep.
I thought it was Dark Side of at first, but it's Dark Side Disney.
Yep.
And as we said, go to darksideofdisney.com. You can find all his stuff there. Go to his publisher's website as well. Find all the other books there. And it, you know, it's been great having you on. So thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, guys. It's been fun.